WCRI's festival series highlights one of our community's greatest musical traditions, the Newport Music Festival. Since 1969, the Newport Music Festival has hosted over 2,000 concerts in Rhode Island's most prestigious venues, while presenting world-renowned and emerging classical music artists from around the globe. The Newport Music Festival has left an indelible mark on our music history here in Rhode Island, as well as around the world. Now, here's host Mike Mano, along with the festival's executive director, Pamela Pantos.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Newport Music Festival special series here on WCRI. I'm Mike Mano, always pleased to be sitting with Pamela Pantos, the executive director of the Newport Music Festival. And Pamela, we're already, believe it or not, into the second week of December.
And we just finished three beautiful Christmas concerts this weekend.
It's amazing when those things just kind of roll along. They happen and you take so long to plan them, and then all of a sudden they're gone.
I know. It was beautiful, though. You know, full houses, and everybody was really thrilled, and I think it had such a holiday spirit. So thank you to all of our guests and patrons who joined us for those beautiful concerts.
All right. What do you have for us today?
Well, I was inspired by Thanksgiving this year, perhaps because it was so late in the season. And because of that, I started thinking of pilgrimage and music and pilgrims and pilgrimages, and I came up with a Wagner program.
Okay, or as people in Cranston say, Wagner.
Well, I lived in Germany for 18 years, so we shall say Wagner, okay?
All right.
So we're going to start with the overture to Wagner's Tannhäuser. And the title, Tannhäuser und der Sängerkrieg auf Wartburg, literally means Tannhäuser and the Minnesinger's Contest at Wartburg. So Wagner was a fascinating character. He was an extreme personality, and as you'll hear this evening, all of his music was extreme to some certain extent. So he sets this based on the legendary medieval German Minnesinger tales. And the whole story is about these song contests, and there's a love theme, which you always hear through Wagner's work. So this one we're just going to jump into. Again, it's about a pilgrimage. Tannhäuser is really about a man who starts literally in the arms of the goddess Venus and ends up seeking redemption through the love of Elizabeth. So this is the Berliner Staatskapelle and Wilhelm Furtwängler conducting Tannhäuser Overture.
All right, we'll listen to that. It's a little bit lengthy, so after that, we'll take a short break and be back with more.
Thank you. Thank you.
Newport Music Festival special series here on WCRI. I'm Mike Mano, sitting with Pamela Pantos. It's getting to be that magical time of the year, and we're actually reflecting back on a couple weeks ago. Pamela, you were moved by Thanksgiving, so that's kind of the theme of today's show.
Well, that's how I started with Tannhäuser, and now we're actually deeply embedded in Wagner. Once I got started, I had to stay there with this composer. I don't think we've done a program on him before. So the next opera we're going to talk about is Parsifal. And where Tannhäuser was a middle work, Parsifal is actually his last completed opera. What's fascinating about this is, much like Tannhäuser, he based it on a medieval tale. He completed the work in 1857, but he didn't finish it till 25 years later. Wow. So it brewed while he was doing all of his great compositions. And what's interesting about it is it was performed for the first time at Bayreuth, which, as you know, was the theater that he created with the acoustics he wanted, the visuals he wanted. So the story behind how he was inspired to do this piece, he wrote this long piece about how on Good Friday one year he woke up and he saw angels and he was inspired. And what's very funny about that is his wife Cosima writes later and says, that was a little bit of bunk. he called it his Good Friday music, but he actually said, it's as far-fetched as anything else I've ever written. So there was always a little bit of something about Wagner. So he conducted a private performance himself in 1880 for his patron Ludwig II, the crazy king of Bavaria. And then after that, it moved to Bayreuth. At that very first performance for the crazy king, there were so many problems in moving the scenery, because Bayreuth was built differently, and Wagner himself had all of these crazy, huge ideas about the size of scenery and the cost of sets and all of these things.
But not realistic.
But not realistic. Right. So they couldn't even move the scenery in time. So what ended up happening is Engelbert Humperdinck, who was assisting in the production, and people are thinking, Engelbert Humperdinck, who plays the piano? No. The composer of the opera Hansel and Gretel, right. Engelbert Humperdinck, happened to be there and assisting. This is, you know, we have all those wonderful geniuses working at the same time. Writes a little bit of music to cover the scene changes.
Sure. All right.
So, of course, later, we eliminate the music as we became more proficient in moving scenery, but it's very, very funny. So for the first 20 years of its existence, after that original production for The King, the only stage performances took place at Bayreuth. And there were two reasons for this. One, it was Wagner's last opera, and he had his vision of how he wanted it to be done. And the other reason was he knew that this opera would provide a steady stream of income for his family. And let's not forget, Wagner was almost put in a debtor's prison early in his life. So he was very concerned with money and leaving money behind and a legacy for his family. So finally, one day, many, many years later, New York City, the Met, the first Met, ended up performing it out of the country. But that's really interesting that it, you know, Bayreuth really had a monopoly on the opera for a long time. There's also something that many of our patrons may know is that at Bayreuth, audiences don't applaud at the end of the first act.
Hmm.
And the reason this happened is a complete misunderstanding. So
don't clap.
After much applause, after the first and second acts, Wagner said to the audience that the cast wouldn't take curtain calls until the end of the performance so they could keep it going. So the audience misinterpreted that and thought, no applause. The opera finishes and no one applauds. There's no applause.
How gratifying.
Right, exactly. And Wagner says, did they even like it? So at subsequent performances, some believe that Wagner wanted no applause and there was silence after the first two acts. So, you know, in one of those kind of apocryphal stories that gets handed down, now the audiences never applaud after the first act. And what's
tradition.
So funny, tradition. And what's so funny is that Wagner himself screamed bravo at performances to try to get the audience going, but they never did because they thought they were honoring his intentions. Anyway, Wagner craziness. Let's listen to the first act prelude. This is the Berlin Philharmonic with Wilhelm Furtwängler conducting.
All right, we'll listen to that and then take a short break and be back with more.
Thank you.
the Newport Music Festival's special series program. I'm Mike Maino. Pamela Pantos is telling us all about Wagner, and we're going to pick it up right where you left off.
So we just heard the last piece that he ever wrote, or the last completed opera that he ever wrote. Now we're going to go back to his first success, which was the opera Rienzi. And many of us know the overture. It's often played outside of the opera. It was first performed at the Königliches Hoftheater in Dresden in 1842. Again, the opera was set in the 1300s. He had a little bit of an obsession for this medieval period of time. And what's very funny about this is he writes it in the grand opera style that we were used to in French opera, with ballet, with, you know, four acts. And later in his life, he becomes incredibly critical of the French style. And yet, this is how he had his first success.
Right.
So he bit the hand that fed him a tiny bit. People have said that, you know, Rienzi is Meyerbeer's best opera. Of course, Meyerbeer, the great opera conductor, the French opera conductor. And what's so funny about this is Meyerbeer, who mentored Wagner and made sure that his opera was produced. So during this period of time, he was almost committed to a debtor's prison, which is unbelievable, right? So he moves outside of the city, realizing that there people might not get him. And while he's working with the cast and putting the piece on stage for the first time, there was this little joke, because the performers loved the opera so much, they would like throw a dollar into like a jar, you know, the equivalent of a dollar, saying, oh my God, this is such a great piece, you know, let's put a silver groschen into this little jar to create a fund. But none of them really knew that the money was created because Wagner was so down and out that they were actually feeding him during the production.
Wow.
I mean, that's how down and out he was. Anyway, so the premiere of Rienzi took place in 1842, as we said, and it was very well received, despite the fact that it was over 6 hours long. In the meantime, he did cut the opera down to its current length. But if you think people were willing to sit for 6 hours because the music was so gorgeous, something completely different, and really the start of Wagner's career. So quite fascinating. We will hear the London Festival Orchestra, conducted by Alfred Scholz, play the overture to Wagner's Rienzi.
It won't be 6 hours long. It'll only be about 12 minutes. But thank you, Pamela, and we'll see you next time with the music from the Newport Music Festival.
Thank you.
thank you for listening to WCRI's Festival Series featuring the Newport Music Festival. For more information on the festival, special seasonal concerts, to purchase tickets, or to donate, call 849-0700 or visit newportmusic.org.